I've enjoyed the work of my next guest for a long, long time. His name is Frank DeFord. He is actually going to be here in our town next Tuesday for the UMSL Founders Dinner over at the Ritz in Clayton. He has a brand new book out called The Entitled, A Tale of Modern Baseball, a novel. He is, of course, a regular mainstay in Sports Illustrated and has been in there for decades. He's in the Sports Writers Hall of Fame. And you've seen him on TV on HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, and I'm very happy to have him back on the show this afternoon. Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Paul. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you again. The book is a baseball saga of two eras clashing, isn't it?
I guess you could call it that. One of the main characters is an old manager who batted around the minor leagues all his life and, you know, is the soul of the game and has finally gotten to the a chance to manage in the big leagues, and the other main character is the title character.
The Entitled.
He is the star, the superstar, who everybody gives him everything. And it's sort of a story about these two strange men.
I'm sure that people who know your writing for years have been reading the book and trying to figure out, okay, who's the model here? So who are the models?
Well, nobody is the model. I think they're both very much composite characters. Among other things, Paul, you know, it's no fun if you just took somebody who's real and made them into a fictional character, changed their name. You know, that's no fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to build a character. And so you can take any number of superstars. They're not just baseball superstars. It's a baseball book. But, you know, I borrowed from here and there. And the same thing with the old manager. That's a... You know, I suppose you could say there's a little bit of Tony La Russa in there.
Mm-hmm.
Tony made the majors, but, you know, he was a real hanger-on. He really was no good as a player, and yet has become an extraordinary manager.
Yeah, so you didn't want to go with Timmy La Russa and Benny Bonds.
No, that's right. That's absolutely right. And the superstar is Hispanic, because so many baseball superstars are. I think you've got a guy there named Pujols.
Yes, we do.
Fits into that category. And so obviously people say, well, it must be Pujols, it must be Rodriguez. No, come on, it's a little bit of all those guys.
Do you see, in all the years that you've been covering this, more problems for managers in having to deal with these superstar millionaire athletes?
Oh, sure. And I mean, that simply goes back to free agency. As long as your ball player was tied to your team, that servitude that all sports had for a while, the manager could lord it over him. Well, right now, the manager knows if he's not a good guy, you know, your ball player can walk as soon as his contract is up. And as a matter of fact, that sort of worked into the story, that the manager knows very well that the star could leave if he doesn't like the way he treats him. And so that puts the manager on tenterhooks. He's got to be a lot more careful, and yet in the same way, he's still got to command the respect of the guy. If he's just a sycophant who's kissing up to the star, most guys don't like that either.
So if that balance of power has shifted in the locker room, has it also shifted in the ownership suite and in the league as well?
I think the balance of power has shifted to the field, which is to say the players have more power than they ever had before. I mean, again, going back a generation or so. But by the same token, everybody is doing so well right now that we shouldn't read too much into it, because everybody's making money.
Mm-hmm.
The owners are making money. Everybody who invests in baseball, all the sponsors and so forth, are making money. The players are making money. It's a flush time. And I think the next time that things go bad again, and they will, then we'll see how that power reverts. It's an indisputable that the union does not have as much power as it used to, because it made so many mistakes. It was his own fault, hubris. But the players themselves, I think, the players and their agents, let's say, have more power.
The union's only power these days seems to be to keep needles out of the arms of their players. And I don't mean needles of steroids. Yeah. I mean needles for blood tests.
I know. And that's where they made such a huge mistake. Because they argued that testing for competitive drugs, you know, steroids and so forth, was the same as for recreational drugs. And, of course, that's not true at all. It's two entirely different things. And that's where they got mixed up and caused so many problems. And now I think they're going to do it all over again with human growth hormone, refusing to test for it. And I don't think they've learned the lesson. And I'm just talking about the baseball union. All unions seem to be this way. The people, the fans, want that. They want to know what's fair. And, hey, a little blood? Come on. We all do that, right? You go to the doctor's office. What's the first thing they say? Go over there and take your test first.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and so, hey, they're big, strong guys, and they can stand a few pinpricks.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Frank DeFord, whose new novel is entitled The Entitled. And it's another terrific book from Frank, a baseball novel about an old-time manager and an egomaniac star outfielder. It's funny that you talked about how flush baseball is these days with success, and certainly the players are, because I can't remember a time that a sport has been more under the microscope of scandal than this year and the last few.
But you know, it doesn't seem to affect the fans that much. I mean, the last time I looked, you have a few people in the park every night there.
Oh, yeah, it's packed.
That's what I mean. And you've had all kinds of sad things happen this year. Sad, I mean, in the death of Hancock. And then this last thing happened to Ankiel, which was the end of this wonderful, or at least the end of a chapter of what has been such a, you know, feel-good story.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it that way, because I hope that he rebounds from all this and can continue to go on with, you know, rebuild the natural part two.
Yeah, I caught myself there, because it certainly doesn't have to be the end of the story.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the way it is, at least in the team sports, Paul, where you have such a devotion to your team that overrides. The individual sports, it's a little different. I mean, track and field has suffered terribly because of drugs. Cycling has suffered terribly. Because there, you know, you're only dealing with individuals and not that team jersey that's got your city's name across the chest. It makes it a whole lot different.
But, and we found it very interesting that when the Ankiel story broke in the New York Daily News, people here completely naturally rallied around him. Cardinal Nation was behind him and critical of the media and the prosecutors and anybody who was saying any of these things about Rick.
Hey, when Latrell Sprewell choked his coach, right?
Yep.
He comes to New York for the Knicks. He's Mr. Wonderful. Bill Belichick, who was one of the surliest, most disagreeable people, second perhaps only to Barry Bonds, right?
Yep.
They're all defending him in Boston.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Oh, they're picking on him because he's been so successful. Everybody does it. How can you pick on our boy, Bill? And the same thing in San Francisco. I thought San Francisco was supposed to be sophisticated. But when it comes to your team, it's us.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think scandal just doesn't seem to affect team sports.
Let's talk about Belichick for a minute. You wrote about him in an SI this week. You called him Belichick. Well, what do you think of that argument? Well, everybody does it. Does everybody do the spying in the NFL?
Well, nothing like he did. I mean, everybody's looking for an edge, and you know, it's perfectly all right to be on the field and stand there in the same way that you sitting in the dugout in baseball can try to pick up signs. There's nothing wrong with that. But what's wrong is using artificial devices, films and so forth. And I don't think everybody does do it. No, I have never heard any suggestion that it was widespread. As a matter of fact, what surprises me is to hear people say, well, we kind of knew Belichick was doing this all along. Well, why didn't anybody say anything? I mean, it's just sort of America, this code or something?
But wait a minute, I got to go back to something here. It's okay for a coach in the booth to use binoculars to keep an eye on the other coach on the field.
Now that's interesting. I don't know where the line is drawn, Paul.
Yeah, because, you know, if he brings out a camera or a video a camcorder, oh no, that's too much.
I don't know how. Of course, football's a little different that way because you do have people up in the booth, don't you?
Yeah.
In baseball, the line is very neatly drawn. I see it with the naked eye, it's okay. I use any kind of binoculars or I use anybody off the field, right?
Uh-huh.
That's out of bounds. You can't do it. That's very simple in baseball. That's been the code, as far as I know, going back to the 19th century. Football, there's just so many people in football and they're spread all around. I really don't know what the code is on binoculars.
Do you think Roger Goodell handled that matter with Belichick and the Pats the right way?
Yeah. I think, some people could say he should have been suspended. The money thing kind of leaves me cold because these guys have so much money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to pay the fine? Are they going to just charge more for beers there in the stadium? It's an interesting thing that I thought maybe he should have just forfeited the game. Now, that would have really been extreme. But you know the problem there, Paul?
What?
Gamblers. Oh, that would have created chaos. Guys would have paid the bets, or they couldn't do that.
Now, even the legal ones in the books in Las Vegas, yeah. Are they going to go back to the gambler and say, all right, here's your money back?
Now, I guarantee you, if anybody ever said that to Commissioner Goodell, he would say that never crossed his mind.
Right.
You know? But just think about it. It would be hard to forfeit a game 2 or 3 days later in the National Football League.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd really get a lot of people angry.
Well, that's why I always love it in baseball when a manager doesn't like something that goes on and they file an official protest. I mean, except for George Brett and the Pine Tar, ever gone back later and changed the game?
No, I don't think so. No, that's one of the reasons you change the game is like changing history.
Right.
It's like taking the movie and backing everything up. I mean, it's just so hard to do. I mean, that's like people who say they should put some kind of asterisk next to Bonds. What are you going to do? Are you going to put an asterisk next to all the pitchers who threw the home? I mean, you can't do it. History's history. It's gone. It's over.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is he did hit 73 baseballs over the wall.
That's right. He did it, and we didn't do anything about it at the time, and I just don't think you can go back and change history. It still says 1919, Cincinnati Reds beat the Chicago White Sox in a World Series. It doesn't say the Chicago White Sox laid down.
Now, for my listeners who haven't read your SIP piece this week, explain why you compare Bill Belichick to Richard Nixon.
Well, they're both very smart guys who are obviously very uncomfortable in their skins. Both of them have a very difficult time with the media. I don't know about Belichick, but everybody has always said that Nixon always felt like maybe he shouldn't be where he was. You know, that's a lot of successful people feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, how did I get here? You know, I don't know whether Belichick feels that way, but I do know this. He is there amongst all these great athletes, and he wasn't even good enough to do anything but play Division III football, and he wasn't very good at that. And so maybe that's in his mind. And the other thing, most importantly, he feels that they both feel, both Nixon and Belichick, it's always us against them, right?
Yeah.
And I'll do anything I can. And finally, to bring it right down to it, Nixon had Watergate. He didn't need it. He was going to win that election. He did. He won 49 states. It was a perfectly useless thing.
Yep.
And Belichick could beat the New York Jets with that team he's got right now.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
Right.
And so it was pointless. So they both, but they're always, got to get one more thing. So I thought the analogy was pretty good.
I like it. I like it a lot. Talking today with Frank DeFord, whose credits include a couple of decades at least as senior contributing editor at Sports Illustrated. He's a 6-time National Sports Writer of the Year. You see him every month on HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. He has been named by Sporting News magazine the most influential sports voice among members of the print media. And he was at one point the man behind an effort that I liked a lot and I was sorry to see fail. It was called The National, a national sports newspaper, a daily, that was, what would that be, Frank, 1990 or so?
Got it right about, folded in June of 91.
What happened there?
Couldn't distribute it. I mean, I know that sounds crazy and so simple. Putting it together was great. You can do all that with satellites, but getting it from the printing press to people's doors is hard when you are trying to do it nationally, but it would be like 25 or 30,000 papers in St. Louis, you know, and it just was unwieldy, and 50,000 in Chicago, which sounds like a lot, but it really isn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we just couldn't do it economically. Maybe it's easier to do it today. I see where, like, the New York Times has become a national newspaper.
Yeah.
But the real hurdle was, because we were a sports paper, we had to come out so late to get all the scores. So you couldn't piggyback on somebody else's delivery service. That caused all kinds of problems, and people were right. They didn't want to get a sports newspaper that didn't have the score.
Yeah, you couldn't say late game in parentheses.
Yeah, I mean, and so we were originally, which was really idiotic, we were tied to the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal closes at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when the market's closed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're just starting to go to work at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, it was such a shame because the product, everybody loved the product.
Yeah, I did.
Advertisers loved the idea if we could deliver it, but we couldn't deliver it. So, end of story. We unfortunately had to fold our tents.
Frank's new book is a novel called The Entitled. You may have remembered a novel he wrote a while back called Everybody's All-American, which became a movie starring Dennis Quaid, and if my memory serves me correctly, directed by Taylor Hackford.
That's correct.
Were you happy with the movie?
Oh, yeah. I thought Taylor did a wonderful job. And writers of books aren't supposed to say that. Oh, they ruined my... Oh, I had this masterpiece and these frauds in Hollywood turn... You know that. But he did a great job.
Are you looking at this becoming a movie?
I've talked to people in Hollywood, and this book has a slight problem. I think it's a better story, but it has... It goes back and forth a lot, and that's tricky in the movies. I mean, it tells the backstory of both of the main characters,
mm-hmm.
and the trick is to figure out how to do that without jumping around too much, because you just can't do that.
Does that come into your mind as you sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to write a novel, I have an idea, here's what I'm going to write, ooh, I better keep an eye on what this will be as a movie?
No, I think if you did that, you'd never get the novel done.
Yeah.
I think you have to write the novel and then hope that there's some way that you can turn it into a movie. And I have talked to a couple people. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit down myself. I'm so familiar with it. I'm sort of sick of the book right now. You know, you write it, you talk about it.
Yeah.
But after I get to like it again, I think I'm going to sit down and see if I can't plot it out and figure out a way to do it, because I know it's a good story.
Were you involved in the screenplay for Everybody's All American or the ESPN thing, 4 minutes?
I 4 minutes. I wrote the screenplay. That was about Roger Bannister.
That was terrific, by the way.
Thank you. I love Roger. What Roger Bannister did. No, I did not write the screenplay. Two of my books have been turned into movies, that one and the book about my daughter, Alex, who died of cystic fibrosis. And both of those, the screenplays were written by someone else. But Taylor Hackford cast me in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I play a racist cafe owner who throws the black people out.
Uh-huh.
And I still get residuals.
Do you?
I get like, well, $12, $7.16.
Are you on the commentary track on the DVD?
I don't know if I'm on the all I know is I'm there in the movie, so yeah, I'm on any DVD, I'm there in my scene.
Every once in a while a check comes, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, they cut my hair to make me look like a redneck, and I put on a southern accent, and I had a ball.
Talking with Frank DeFord, a sports writer whose new novel is called The Entitled. In all the years you've been writing about sports, both fictional and non-fictional, has your view of sports hardened?
Probably from the very beginning, yes. But I think the hardening took place a long time ago. Yeah, it wasn't like the years of innocence dragged on.
Yeah.
Before kicking and screaming, I realized. So I think I caught on pretty quickly.
Yeah, you've never really looked at sports through that gauzy lens of, what a wonderful thing sports is.
No, but I think I was like hanging out with athletes in the beginning. I mean, I saw the because I was their age, right?
Yep.
Nobody on the St. Louis Cardinals wants to hang out with Frank DeFord now, you know, their grandfather. But in the beginning, and so I really got to see it from the inside. And saw a lot of good things from the inside, too, by the way. But I think I caught on pretty quickly that as everybody says, it's a business. It's full of a lot of venal characters. It's full of a lot of avaricious. It's also full of a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
It really is.
The good news is we only have that good stuff here in the radio business. There's none of that other stuff. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with sports writer Frank DeFord, whose new book is called The Entitled, A Tale of Modern Baseball. The press release says you create a world where the idealism of the old game meets the reality of today's sports landscape. Did you write that, Frank?
No, that's what PR people write, but that's fair.
Yeah, I think that is a pretty good summary.
No, that is, because you're talking about the old traditional figure, the Howie Traveler, the old manager, and he's no dummy. He knows it's a modern world today, and yet he brings that kind of idealized romanticism with him, and he does love the game. So, and then he runs smack into all the endorsements and glamour and money and fame and all that is represented by Jay Alcazar, the star.
You know, whenever I talk about the baseball and steroids, people always talk to me about kids. You know, the kids look up to these players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that that's changed as well here in the 21st century? A young kid who gets into baseball at 6, 8, 10, 12 years old, whatever it is, do they look at these ball players the way maybe you and I did when we were that age?
I think they do, but I think they know a lot more. They know a lot more about everything.
Yeah.
There's just not as many secrets. You just can't keep secrets away from kids today.
Right.
Well, with the internet and everything. So they know more about sex, say, to start with.
Yep.
So if they know more about sex, they know more about ball players. and they know ball players, they're not the stick figures that we thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
We saw them, you know, with our pictures on the cards, and we see them out at the ballpark, and they were just sort of, you know, superhuman.
Yeah, I mean, well,
these kids know that they have clay feet of clay, and they are humans. But that still doesn't mean that they don't look up to them, because everybody's more tarnished today. There's no secrets.
Yep.
So I think kids, it's a shame too. I rather liked it that I grew up a little more innocent.
I didn't know most of that stuff until I read Ball 4.
Yeah. I mean, and so. So it was a shame, not just with baseball, but with everything. It was sort of fun to see the world peeled back as you got older. And now, unfortunately, kids see it right through the window. So,
or maybe fortunately, maybe it serves as a cautionary tale to them at a younger age.
Maybe it does. But that doesn't mean, I don't think, that they still, some of them anyway, really worship these ball players. No, worship's too strong a word, but they look up to them and admire them. And you still, even if a guy's a creep, you can admire him for what he does out there. You know, he hits home runs or he throws touchdown passes or whatever he does. It's amazing, and you can still take great delight in watching somebody do that.
Frank DeFord will be here in St. Louis next Tuesday as the guest speaker at the Founders Dinner for the University of Missouri St. Louis over at the Ritz, and his new book is a terrific read, a wonderful novel, A Tale of Modern Baseball, entitled The Entitled. Frank, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Paul. It's been nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Frank DeFord here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.